Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Welcome to Face to Face. This is a show about change and what's next. It's a show that asks questions and peels back the layers of our average everyday experience and goes beyond scratching the surface. We interview people doing incredible things who are making a difference around the globe. Join me as we listen in and get one step closer to understanding that big ideas shared create collaboration. Collaboration can inspire community, and communities create social change. I'm David Peck, and this is Face to Face.
So my next interview is with Tiama Alhamli and Andrew Moyer, and we talk about their new film, Hockey Mom. It's available on CBC Gem. You can find it there. Check it out, CBC Docs, POV. This is a film about parenthood. This is a film about trust. It's about relationships and about community. I think it's a film about generosity and really understanding what that actually means. I think this is a film and a story that it's called Hockey Mom, by the way, and I need you to look it up, and not only go and watch the trailer now, but read the quick synopsis. This is a film that touches on a whole lot of different things, and we get into the refugee crisis. We talk about newcomers to Canada. We talk about things like relationships and why they matter. And about policy and about presuppositions and what it means to step into not only a new a community or a new family, but a new country as well. And so we also get into something that I think is really interesting that needs to be unpacked a little bit more. And it's this idea of job survival or survival jobs, as Tiama will talk about. And it comes up in the film, but it's also an issue, I think, for Canadians and for Canada and maybe even for Global Affairs Canada and how we respond to new Canadians and what does it mean to mentor folks and what does it mean to come alongside and actually support and actually build capacity in a way that's meaningful and that's going to actually make contact with reality in the long run. So stay tuned. This is a relevant story for so many reasons. You don't have to go too far in the news to find out that this is connected in a variety of ways and not just connected here in Canada. This is a film that needs to be seen globally. There are, you know, that whole idea of similarity through difference. There are universals here that apply across the board. So stay tuned. Coming right up, a conversation with the two directors for the new film, Hockey Mom. Don't forget davidpecklive.com for more information about my podcasting and my public speaking. And also, you can even order a copy of Real Change is Incremental there if need be. Would love for you to pick that up. You can get a copy through Amazon.ca. And don't forget, you can advertise on Face-to-Face. We have a couple new advertisers. Film.ca is going to be a sponsor coming up in the very near future. And Beer Can Magazine. Can you believe that? Beer Can Magazine. And they are a new sponsor, and we're going to be working together. This is a magazine about community. It's about beer, of course, but it's also about community and it's about entrepreneurship, and it's about building businesses, and it's about giving back and legacy and all of the above, and about building relationships. So you're going to want to look for that as well. We've got a newsletter you can advertise in, you can advertise online, and of course on the podcast as well. So please reach out if you feel the need and or the desire to do that. And also, rabble.ca. Don't forget, you can find not only my podcast there, Face to Face. You can also find a whole host of other speakers, writers, thinkers, bloggers, podcasters there as well. So yeah, lots to think about. And don't forget that also coming right up is this wonderful interview with Tiama Al-Kamli and Andrew Moore talking about their new film, Hockey Mom. Well, welcome to Face to Face. We're joined by two today, very special guests with us. Today we have Tiama Al-Kamli and Andrew Moyer here with us, and they are here to talk about, well, as usual, we're going to talk about a whole lot of things, but we're talking mostly, specifically, and intentionally about a new film, new CBC film called Hockey Mom. Tiama, Andrew, thanks for joining me today.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
So why don't you guys tell us a little bit about maybe about yourselves, but also just about this getting into this film and into this story. I mean, I would hope most people are already in a way resonating with the title Hockey Mom, and you've raised some questions for some people, I would imagine. Tell us a little bit about that journey to the story, if that makes sense. And maybe Tiama, you could dial us into that right out of the gate.
Sure. So I'm a filmmaker, documentary so far. I was actually born in Syria, in Aleppo. I moved to Dubai when I was 5 years old, so I grew up there. And then at 17, I moved to Canada to go to UFC, where I studied cinema studies and drama. And how I basically found my way to the project was through Andrew. So maybe he'd like to take it from here.
Sure. I met a man named Graham McKenzie who runs a nonprofit organization called Ready, Set, Play. And that's an organization based in Toronto that connects kids who need help, you know, resource-wise and financially playing sports, if maybe their parents don't have the means to access sports themselves. So Ready, Set, Play helps connect, you know, kids with sports, gives them resources that they need to participate. And I met Graham, and he was telling me about this single mom who lived in a basement apartment in Toronto with her 7-year-old son. She had come here from Syria, and she had left her husband a couple weeks after she moved here. And he was helping her get her son into hockey. And so I thought that sounded like just a really interesting person and a really interesting family dynamic. And there was a lot about her that I wanted to know more about. So I asked Tiama if she would come meet with me and meet Fatma. And then we started filming with her about a week later.
Did you start that before you actually had the sense that you were going to make a full-length film? Was it really, hey, let's start recording some of this, get a better sense for where we're heading maybe, and then make that call and
yes,
look for funding and so on? Is that, I mean, that's often how documentaries start, isn't it?
Yeah. There was a specific grant that I was looking to access that had a deadline, but, usually how I like to work is I'll hang out with people for a while. I'll film with them for a while. Sometimes I'll film with somebody and I'll find that, you know, maybe it's not the right time to make a film about them, or maybe there just isn't enough going on to justify like continuing filming with them for like potentially, you know, 2 years, who knows how long. So we just spent time with them in their apartment, and we were going to make a short film more focused on Mash playing hockey, but there was just so much going on, and Fatma was taking another really big step in her life. And so we decided to keep filming to see what happened.
So how much time did you actually spend with the family, Tiama, Andrew, either of you, to sort of, you know, you said you went in with this idea of a short film, and then obviously, I mean, isn't that a great commentary on the human condition? Don't we all have wonderful, deep, complicated stories to tell?
Yeah, definitely. We spent about 2 years filming with them.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. And it became, I mean, it's soon a few months into the process, we did realize that there is more here in the story that deserves more time. You know, it was a really complex situation, especially when we started to learn about Mesh's situation at school. He was getting into a little bit of trouble at school, and Fatma was kind of blaming the transition from, because he grew up in a refugee camp. They spent 4 years in a refugee camp before arriving here in Canada. So she was really blaming that transition from completely unstructured life to, you know, rigid, structured school. Yeah, so a lot of aspects of their lives was really interesting. And so we thought definitely deserved more time.
Yeah. And I guess too, did you feel an affinity, for this story in a specific way? I mean, you left Syria at five, you must have been over the last, was it about 7 or 8 years, paying much more careful attention. I mean, most of us, I think, are, who are aware of, you know, global issues and so on, but did you feel a sense of responsibility to this story in a way that you might not to something else? Does that make sense?
Oh yeah, of course. Of course I did. I mean, I left Syria when I was five, but we were there every year, every summer for the whole summer. So we still maintained like quite close relationships. I have a very large extended family that we were also all very close. And now all of these people, most of them have left Syria. A lot of them are, you know, they're spread all over the world. So for me, definitely, it was very personal story. And of course, we've been following the Syrian revolution, then the Syrian war for the last 9 years. So yeah, it was definitely essential to follow a story that shows what happens after refugees arrive in their host countries, right? Because we hear a lot about, refugees and escaping the war and the conditions that they're escaping from, and maybe the conditions of the camps, and then they arrive here and what happens next? So,
yeah. And I mean, would you guys agree that there's probably a certain group of us who think that, okay, coming to Canada, this land, sorry for the cliche, this land of plenty, you know, you're coming to the West. I hope you can hear the sort of the smile, because it is on some levels, right? Of course it is. And it's wonderful. And isn't this amazing? But there are a whole host of implications there. And I think that comes out. For me, it does in the film. Oh, and by the way, congratulations to both of you on the film. I mean, couldn't have been an easy story to tell. Couldn't have been an easy story to get funding for. So congrats on that. And how about a quick, before we go any deeper, quick shout out. So CBC Docs, POV Docs, we can see it on CBC Gem. Is that right?
Yes.
That's easy to find, yes?
Yeah, definitely. If you go online to the CBC website, you can find the Hockey Mom page there on the website, which will take you to the Gem app. That's if you're on a computer. If you're just on an iPad, another device, you can log into CBC Gem app directly and watch it there.
There's a group I think of us who would think that things are going to be better now. You're coming to, and I think this comes out really early on in the film, this notion of building a better life. And isn't this really what this is all about? And isn't that kind of the shout out for all of us, really, in a sense, it seems to me. And I love, for me, what I love about doc film is there's this notion of similarity through difference. And I think that's another layer to what you're doing with this film. But I wonder about the naivete of that. And you had mentioned, TM, this idea of survival jobs. I'd love for you to talk a little bit about that in connection to, you know, how do you start a new life? This whole idea, you know, FADMA wanting to move to Windsor and the challenges of that and the sponsor family and how that plays out in the film. And these are not easy decisions to make.
Sure. Well, I think this notion is very much believed on both sides of the ocean. So, for example, Fatma's family believes that she must be in paradise now. And then, and I guess also a lot of people in Canada think that, yes, now these people are, they have reached, you know, the shores of safety, and they're doing so by default, they must be doing better. But it's very difficult to move to a whole new country, even when you have planned on it. So, you know, obviously just uprooting yourself in a very normal move involves all kinds of hoops that you have to go through. And then also when you arrive, you have to build entirely new networks of friends and career and all kinds of different things. So imagine for somebody who did not really want to come to Canada, was somehow like forced because they were, you know, because of the war and because of the situation back home, and didn't speak any English, didn't have any family, didn't know anybody, completely different world. It's very difficult to build yourself up from zero, especially with a little kid. And not to forget that then she also made the decision to leave her husband very shortly after, as Andrew had just said, like 2 weeks after. So that also complicated things further. And even though she spent a couple of years working very, very hard on herself to get her English from almost zero to a quite a good level, and then looking into the job market, there's still very few opportunities for skilled people. So she was a teacher back home in Syria, and her dream was to obviously work in her field here in Canada. But of course, it's very difficult because she didn't speak very much English, and it's a problem that we see in all kinds of different industries, because a lot of people, refugees or immigrants, new Canadians, newcomers arriving here, they are quite educated, and they do have specialized degrees, and they are teachers and they're doctors. And because there is no path for them to kind of, you know, equalize these degrees that they already hold, they end up, you know, in survival jobs, just doing whatever just to make some money to get their family off the ground. So that's something maybe we need to look into. I know for doctors, it's especially difficult in Canada. From my personal experience with family friends, friends who ended up in the US or Sweden who were doctors are working, but friends who are in Canada have been here for 4 years and still unable to. So yeah, that's a waste for us as Canadian society, right?
It really is a waste, and it's frustrating, and it's got to be so debilitating to you individually, you know, just even from a level of confidence as well, right? To have this level of education and level of experience and basically, well, not basically, not be able to use it in a way that makes sense, that makes contact with reality, and that's meaningful. It's, yeah, it doesn't, there's something not quite right about that, it seems to me. Andrew, what do you take away from this that you didn't know going in? I mean, from a, you know, I'm assuming you're Canadian, what do you learn? What do you now find yourself thinking about and talking about when it comes to these kinds of issues?
Well, when I had, like, since this sort of wave of Syrian migrants came to Canada, I think it's like 4 years ago, 4 or 5 years ago, I found myself stumbling upon a lot of stories that were quite rosy about how these Syrians were doing, and like a lot of there was a lot of fascination, like people were really fascinated, they wanted to know how they were doing, and it felt like there was a sense for them that there was a sense that they had to perform some kind of, I guess, gratitude that was almost fake, like, we're doing so well, You know, it was a lot
like
of
almost like almost pay lip service almost.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if it was lip service, but like, just like it was, you know, maybe politeness on the part of the
right,
families.
Right.
And then also, like this idea that, you know, the people who were bringing them here, like us and us who were hosting them, wanted them to do well. So there wasn't really much room for anything beyond like, look at this amazing family that's opened up a bakery or something like that. And I was just so curious. Like, I was like, what about the people who, you know, aren't self-starters? Like, how are they doing? How are the people right. who like didn't know any English? How, you know, how are parents of children doing? There was often a lot of, you know, focus around children. Like, oh, look at this really cute kid who's like made friends. You know, well, what about like all the parents? And so I found myself, like, as I got to know Fatma, actually kind of like bringing some of those, that pressure onto her in my mind. Like, I was expecting that she would be able to, I don't know, get a job really quickly. I was expecting her to like even emotionally settle in like way more quickly than I think was fair for me to think. And so for me, spending time with Fatma and getting to know her, and also like getting to know her sponsors, really made me reconsider what my notion of success should be for a family that's coming from a war zone, you know, or coming from a refugee camp. Like, how...
Well, Andrew, just, you know, it just made me think about it. And Tiama, you coming here at 5, and I went to Montreal when I was 6 for 2 years. And that's, I mean, not even close to what so many Syrian families have come through. Just that kind of a move alone, right? Like, yeah. New school, the traumatic components of that, right? Having to make new friends. And we had a neighbor who my son still stays in touch with, who moved to Florida. And I think we can fairly say it was kind of traumatic, but a different kind of trauma, right? And mm-hmm. and just that alone, it makes you start to say, well, hang on a minute here. What am I missing in this greater conversation about what it means to come, you know, to a new country? Something that really stuck with me in your film, and quite a few things did, but I think it was Fatma who said, we all leave our country for different reasons. And I think there's a lot going on in that line. There's a lot packed into that. What are the preconceived ideas that we bring to the table when talking about, you know, new Canadians?
Mm-hmm. I think it's a situation where, as Andrew said, we do expect them to get here and be grateful for being here.
That's right.
Right? Like, okay, yes. Now you're here. Now you're safe.
We let you in.
Be grateful. You know, forgetting that these people have just escaped a war where bombs have collapsed over their heads, where they've seen their family members get blown into pieces, where they've had family members be disappeared, end up in prisons and being tortured for years. So it's very difficult to, you know, of course they are grateful to be here and to be safe. But that doesn't, you know, make the traumatic aspect of surviving a war any less traumatic, right? You still have to deal with that trauma. And so that's a component that we, you know, often forget.
Do you think it was the right call? I mean, Canada was one of the more, I suppose, if I can use the word generous or open with respect to welcoming in, Syrian refugees and so on.
Can I just say something about that?
Yeah, please. Okay. Go. Okay. Yeah.
I mean, yes, of course, Canada was generous, but a country like Germany, for example, has over a million Syrian refugees right now.
Wow.
There's 3.5 million Syrian refugees in Turkey. There are almost a million refugees in Sweden. So there's quite large numbers everywhere in the world. I believe in Canada, with that first wave starting in 2016, that it was 25,000 and then it was 50,000.
Right. Yeah,
and of course, there are still, you know, trickling in, but that policy that in 2016 brought, you know, that sizable amount of people, 50,000 people, I don't think that policy exists so much anymore.
When you say, and why do you think that is? Do you think that there's an underlying political edge to that that's troubling you?
Yes.
I mean, those are significant numbers, right? I mean, Germany,
right.
Turkey,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Significant numbers. And
right. And we also can get to choose, because you have to remember that we here as Canadians, the Canadian government is bringing people, like hand-picking people. And bringing them. People arriving in Europe are just arriving in Europe. So Europe is, I mean, right now, I don't know if you've been following what's happening right now. The situation is awful and Europe has closed its doors and there's at the borders of Turkey and Greece, it's horrific sights. But,
well, it seems to be, Tim, it seems to be getting worse, not better.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Is that, and obviously, you know, the timing of your film is pretty important. So it's going to be about a whole lot of things, like any great doc, any great story. There's a lot more going on than meets the eye. Did you think about that? Some of those implications when you guys were piecing this together, or did you have a very specific idea in mind of where you wanted this to go?
Well, it was commissioned by CBC. So, you know, it was going to be on TV. It was going to be, on their streaming platform. When it comes to timing, it's not really something that's in our control, but, I think it's safe to say that like migration is kind of, a topic of our time at the moment. There are going to be more and more refugees as time goes on. So I think this is going to be something that people, are going to be thinking about. It's a subject that people have to kind of grapple with in their own way. And it's only going to become more intensified with time.
Do you think stories like this help, Roger Ebert said movies were empathy making machines. Do you think stories like this for the most part do that? Help to level that playing field, help to put us in other people's shoes, or do you think they can sometimes have the opposite effect? And I ask that genuinely because I think you're right. I mean, I think, you know, you can't tell what history is going to say until you look back. Right. And so I think there's going to be a whole host of films and stories that are told and articles that are being written about this time in history where maybe we didn't do globally a very good job. Maybe we didn't respond. We responded, but maybe we didn't respond as well as we could have.
Sorry, what's the question? I mean, storytelling, I'd say for sure. Like this, a story of like a mom and her son, like absolutely. I can only hope that like people can relate to that. Like even if you've never met like a family who are a refugee family, you know, that's, I hope that you can see yourself, that they'll be able to see themselves in the story. Like, I hope that the story can resonate with people who, you know, maybe were raised by a single mom and maybe, or like, you know, if you were a kid or if you had a child who had a really, really hard time adjusting in school. And I just hope that the film can resonate with people beyond just the surface of it being about a Syrian family. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, no, I think so. I mean, I think where I was going with it is this idea of exclusivity versus inclusivity. I mean, we, you know, I would hope that you guys as filmmakers, me as a podcaster, the reason I do what I do, you know, trying to get people to empathize with others, trying to get, you know, this notion of similarity through difference, that we don't need to be afraid of the other and we can welcome them in. And there's so much to learn. And like you said, Tiama, about that, I mean, what a waste, you know, not allowing you know, these new Canadians to step in a more significant and a meaningful way. And I just wonder sometimes if this kind of film, if these kind of stories are just sort of preaching to the converted, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. And my hope and desire is that they're not. You know, if Roger Ebert was right, then we're going to be okay. Right?
Yeah.
You know, well, stories are, you know, we're creating empathy here. Right.
Yeah.
I mean, for me, two of the best films I saw this year, and I mean, inclusively of all the film I saw was Fursama and The Cave. I saw Fursama, I don't know, 8-9 months ago and, mm-hmm. and was privileged to see it before it even hit, I think it was Hot Docs or TIFF. I can't remember. And was able to get an interview with them right out of the gate and was mm-hmm. just blown away by not only the film, but that sort of empathy, like, component, that empathetic component built within without even trying, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that is the hope, right? We make this film and we hope that people, as Andrew was saying, there's so many aspects that are universal to the story that are not just about a Syrian refugee story, right? It's about a new immigrant from anywhere in the world can hopefully empathize, a single mom, a parent with a troublesome child, all kinds of different segments of the population hopefully can empathize with it. And also, we call it Hockey Mom, which we hope will right. draw in, maybe a crowd that wouldn't necessarily watch it, let's say, the film. So, yeah, different kinds of universal stories in one.
Yeah, I think that's for me, that's the nail on the head, the universal like nature of this story. I mean, isn't this really, doesn't she say at one point, I think I may have failed as a mom, or at least she's questioning herself in the context of the film. And I mean, isn't that a question that every parent asks?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Isn't that probably, you hope, a question that every teacher asks, you know, on some level, to become a better mom, become a better dad, a better friend, a better lover, a better teacher, and so on?
Mm-hmm. So it's all these moments that you're talking about that I think people can easily identify with, because it is, yeah, like, who, I'm sure I'm not a parent, but I have a lot of friends who are, and I know that a lot of times in their parenting life, they do feel like failures. So I hope that also the film, you know, helps them feel less alone and helps them feel that, no, you're not a failure and you can make it out of this specific moment that's made you feel that way. And everybody struggles, but hopefully there is a path to emerging out of that struggle.
You know, Eb, sadly, we're gonna probably wrap up fairly soon. But a couple other thoughts I had or questions, and there's always more, it seems to me. But doesn't Fatima say at one point, Canada is my home now, and my sponsor family is my family. I just found that really interesting and also really challenging for me. If you know, to put myself in her shoes, you know, let's turn that coin on its head, and I'm heading somewhere and I've got a sponsor family and I'm in a different country. Could I actually even say that? Would I be able to, you know, step into a that kind of an emotional space? Is that true, would you say, for new Canadians, that Canada really is their new home? Or do you think there's always this sense of I'm going to have to get back? Because for me, your film is about so many things, but it's really about finding this place where we're included, where we're loved, where we're embraced.
I think Fatima's trying to build herself the best home that she can. I don't think Canada will ever be her home. I think home is gone, unfortunately. But she's doing the best that she can to make the most of this new life that she has. And certainly I think she loves her sponsors. I think she's very grateful to them. Like, I think she does consider them to be family. But I think she misses her real family, and she misses being around people who understand her in a way that her sponsors just can't. So I guess it remains to be seen, like, how much home she'll feel here after a few years. I think it's been really hard. It's like still a journey. It's she's still kind of figuring that out.
Yeah, I would think so. I would think that would go on for quite some time. I mean, just the whole idea of, you know, trying to connect with people and make friends and build a community. Tiama, can you talk to me a little bit? I didn't get a lot of insight into it, but I did do some work with an organization that was connected to something like it, the Newcomers Kitchen. Can you tell me a bit more about that? That just seemed like you certainly present it like it's a pretty great place. I'd love to hear a little bit more about that, and I think our listeners would enjoy learning a little bit more too.
Mm-hmm. So Newcomer Kitchen it's set up as an NGO that helps Syrian women come together and cook daily meals once a week. So it's definitely been a success story in the sense of bringing a community together, getting these women together. Obviously, when you see them there working and, you know, talking and singing and dancing sometimes, you see why initiatives like that are very important, because it gives them a sense of home. It gives them a sense of familiarity. It also gives them, you know, a reason to get out of the house, something to do. Mm-hmm. They do receive an honorarium. Also, financially, it's small. It's very small, but, you know, it's something. It's something to make them feel that, yes, there are avenues for them, and there are people who care about them, and there are organizations out there that do want to help foster that sense of community to create this home feeling in Canada, which would be the best of both worlds.
So what's next? Do you guys do a follow up with the family? Have you talked about that? Has CBC raised that as a possibility? I think, by the way, it's a really important film and an important story to tell to let Canadians know, and not just Canadians, but hopefully the globe as well. And I'd like to hear about that, because, again, a quick shout out. It's on CBC Docs. For those of you who might be looking for it, CBC Gem. Yeah, is that next? Is the distribution side of things next for you guys, or is there a potential follow up?
There was an idea of we do have a lot of material that we were thinking about making a feature length theatrical version. There are also some ideas of continuing to follow Fatma, but all of them are still at a very early stage. Mm. So now, yes, in terms of distribution, we will be looking to get the film out there in the world and get it some international distribution.
And you had an opening night just this past week, is that not right?
Yeah.
Received well. Tell me a little bit about that fun side of it, the Q&A and how did that all play out?
Yeah, we had our own screening at the Paradise Theater in Toronto. It was really fun. Like, most of the people who were in the audience were people who've been involved in making the film.
Right.
So crew and like people in Fatma and Maj's life, like their sponsors and their sponsors' friends, and I think it was kind of like a victory moment for them, because it really showed off. Like, I think everyone just felt like pretty proud of how far Fatma's come, and I think Fatma and Maj were kind of nervous about it. Well, I know that they were nervous about it because they'd seen the film before, but there's a difference between watching it in your living room and then watching it with like hundreds of people who know you. They were nervous, but I think that they were proud of their participation by the end of the screening. And Maj came up for the Q&A, and it was really fun. Like, we all hung out after, and it was a really nice time.
Well, that's excellent. I wish you guys well with the film. I love the things, trust, community, generosity, and the challenges of just, you know, of being human. The stuff that comes out in the film, I think, is really wonderful, and the intimacy you guys were able to create, I think, is brilliant. So thanks. We've been talking with Andrew Moore and Tiama Al-Khamli about their new film, their new CBC Docs POV film, Hockey Mom. Thanks to you both for your time today. Really, really appreciate it.
Thank you so much, David.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey folks, it's Mark Maron from WTF. I've been talking to all kinds of famous people in my garage since 2009, including a sitting president.
You know, I don't imagine you were flying in here on the chopper thinking like, you know, I am nervous about Mark.
No, I wasn't.
Okay, well, that's good.
That would be a problem.
It would be a problem.
If the president was feeling stressed about...
coming to my garage.
Coming to your garage.
And now there's even more WTF when you subscribe to The Full Marin to get weekly bonus content and all WTF episodes ad-free. Listen to WTF wherever you get podcasts and subscribe to The Full Marin at go.acast.com/WTF.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.